Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi and welcome back. Yes, the song says it all. Ani ma'amin be'emuna shlema, I believe with a perfect faith, b'viat ha-mashiach, in the coming of Mashiach, v'af al pi she'itmameya, and even though he may tarry, achakelo, I wait for him, b'chol yom, every day, she'yavo, that he should come, every day is an opportunity for Mashiach to arrive. This day needs to be and should be the day of the arrival of Mashiach. That is how a Jew needs to live. You want to know Judaism 101.9 in a basic sum up. That's it. We need to wait and expect Mashiach at any moment, any time, any day, and it's going to happen soon. Welcome back. It's Rabbi Michael Katz here with you on Judaism 101.9. It's been a while since we have spoken here on the airwaves. Away for a couple of weeks, and of course before that, Hanukkah and the December holidays, and now we head headlong into a brand new secular year, and there's something synchronistic about the first part of this year, of course, because we would have noticed that the 1st of January was actually on the 1st of Tevis, on the 1st of Tevet, and therefore for the first part, right up until the end of this month, at least, the numbers will coincide. So today being the 15th of January is also the 15th of Tevis. And so it's going to be tomorrow, the 16th, will also be the 16th of Tevis. And so it'll go right up, of course, until the end of the month when, as we know, in the secular calendar, the month is going to be a little bit longer and therefore it's going to get a little bit out of step. But it's quite a cute thing, if you think about it, that there was something about January the 1st this year being on Rosh Chodesh. Doesn't often happen. And of course, it should happen. As we've explained before in Judaism 101.9, a month comes from the word moon. The month is a moon. It should be something lunar. After all, that's how they got to that kind of calculation of 30 days in a month. But then they had to try and fit it in with the solar calendar, and they just chopped it up in a completely different fashion. But there has to be something special about Rosh Chodesh being on the same date as the beginning of the month, and how much more so the beginning of a year, of a secular year. And so today, the 15th of Tevis, we are right at the time of the full moon. We've already gone two weeks and a day already into this new year of 2025. We just got used to, I think, talking about 2024. It's a year that was, I guess, the longest, shortest year. It seemed to have gone on forever in some ways, with all the things that are happening in Israel and Jews around the world. And then, of course, it seems to have flown by. It was hardly a time for 2024 to kind of sink into our system, I guess, when we've already turned the corner. And 2 weeks and a day are down in 2025. And here we are, 15th of Tevis. As we always do at the beginning of Judaism 101.9, point out a few interesting features in history that happened around about this time. Well, the first one I want to touch on has a particular relevance. In fact, there are a few of them that have a particular relevance, of course, to what's going on in the world right now. But this one is that the salvation of Baghdad Jewry took place on this date, which is tomorrow, actually, not today, but on the 16th of Tevis, in 1638. So if we go back to 1638, on this date, Murad IV, who was the Sultan of the Ottoman Empire, recaptured Baghdad from the Persian Shah after a 40-day siege. The Jews of Baghdad, who'd suffered under the Shah's tenure, celebrated this day each year to praise God for rescuing them from the Persian rule. According to legend, the Jews assisted in the capture by secretly conveying a message to the Sultan about a breach in the wall through which his forces could enter the city. I found that particularly interesting in light of what's going on, Persia, Iran, how things turn, how Jews often seem to be on the wrong side. Here we have a story going back to 1638 of the Jews being persecuted by the Shah. Everybody will tell you that under the last Shah, Jews, it seems, prospered, certainly financially, under the Shah in Persia, in Iran, and then, of course, suffered, or seemed to have at least, under the incoming Islamic rulership. And then, of course, what's happening today, everything around the world of terrorism and anti-Israel fighting and rhetoric and missiles and so on, all emanating from that place. It is strange and is interesting that this date comes up in 1638 as a day on which the Jews assisted in the capture by secretly conveying a message to the Sultan about a breach in the wall. So helping out the other side get through a breach in the wall, can we read into that a breach in your technology and your systems in order to allow and enable something to happen in that region, hopefully very, very soon, to the betterment of Israel and, dare I say, to the entire world. On the other side of it, on the 17th of Tevis, which is going to be this coming Friday, corresponding to the 17th of January, the first shul was established in New York, although then it was known as New Amsterdam. This was in 1728. A Rosh Hashanah service had been held in New Amsterdam, and it was on the 17th of Tevis in 1728 that this newfound congregation, which was known as Sheirit Yisrael, purchased a lot in Lower Manhattan, Lower East Side, to erect the first synagogue in New York. It is also the yahrzeit on the 17th of Tevis of the famous Rabbi Yaakov Wolf Krantz, who lived from 1740 to 1804, and he was known as the Dubna Maggid. Yes, Dubna Maggid, Rabbi Yaakov Wolf Krantz. He was particularly known for his parables, for his mashalim, that he employed in his sermons and writings, and thus became known as the Dubna Maggid. On the 18th of Tevis, which is going to be Shabbos, in 469, so let's go way back, and again focusing on Babylon and Pumpadisa and the Persian Empire and so on. Now, here the exilarch, or the Reish Galusa of Babylonian Jewry, whose name was Hunam Mori Bar Marzutra, was executed in Pumpadisa by order of the Persian Emperor on the 18th of Tevis in the year 4229 from creation. That's 469 of the Common Era. Also killed on that day was Rav Mesharshia Bar Pekod, the third Jewish leader who was arrested with them. Rav Amemar Bar Yanuka was actually executed 2 months later.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
And we're back. Yes, this is Rabbi Michael Katz with Judaism 101.9. Great to be with you and continuing our analysis or discussion about several major events that happened during this week in the history of the Jewish people. This is part of Judaism 101.9. Yes, on this show, we are not going to be talking about the parasha of the week. We are going to be talking about things that you need to know, that you should know, or that maybe you knew and forgot, or maybe you hadn't learned yet, or maybe just some nice information about things that happened along the way in this week. And so we forward to coming Monday, which is a significant date, the 20th of January, hopefully going to be a significant date for the world, and it's a significant date, of course, in Judaism. It is Monday, the 20th of Tevis, not only the 20th of January, and it is the day on which we commemorate the yahrzeit of a great sage, one of the greatest, Mi Moshe Vaad Moshe Lo Kam Ke Moshe, as it said about Moshe Ben Maimon, Moses Maimonides. The great Talmudist, halachist, physician, philosopher, leader, a great, great sage for all of us to look up to and to learn the depth of his knowledge and his wealth of writings and so on. Rabbi Moshe ben Maimon passed away on this date, the 20th of Tevis in 1204. He was known as the Rambam, and to the world as large as Maimonides. And interestingly enough, he passed away in Egypt on the 20th of Tevis in 1204, in 4965. It is also the date, strangely enough, that the first volume of the Babylonian Talmud was printed. The tractate Brachot, the tractate Brachos, which is the first tractate in the system of Talmud, it was published, it was printed in Sonsino in Italy on the 20th of Tevis in the year 5244 or 1483. Isn't it interesting that that is the date on which hopefully things might change a little bit for the better in the world with the swearing in of the new president of Donald Trump taking place on that day. Somehow there is something good and positive in that energy of Torah learning, whether it is going back all the way to the Rambam or whether we're thinking about the publication or the printing of Talmud, something significant about that. And let's just do one more, and that is on the 21st of Tevis, which will be next Tuesday, Shimon was born. Now, Shimon was one of the sons of Yaakov and Leah. He was the second son, and he was born in 1567 on this date, the 21st of Tevis, according to most opinions. He was the progenitor of the Israelite tribe of Shimon, and that happened in the year 2194 from creation, or 1567, 9 years after Yaakov Avinu, after Jacob arrived in Haran. But it also marks a strange thing that we have discussed before on Judaism 101.9, that Jews around the world celebrated certain dates within their own communities of great salvation, of great significance. And very often they called them by the name of Purim. It became a Purim when there was kind of the threat that the whole place could have and should have been wiped out, but some kind of a miracle saved them. It became known as Purim. Now, this one took place in Italy in a place called Ancona. I hope I pronounced that correctly. In 1690. It was December the 23rd. It was the 21st of Tevis. It was 1690. And what happened there was there were huge earthquakes and numerous structures collapsed and placed the inhabitants of the city in mortal danger. Now, miraculously, the Jewish quarter was spared. There was a Jewish quarter in the city of Ancona, and it was spared. Only one house, apparently, was damaged. And in commemoration of this event, the local Jewish community established the date as a day of celebration and song, while the previous day, the 20th of Tevis, they marked yearly by fasting and charity, similar to the lineup of Purim, with the fast of Esther to be followed by Purim. First of all, showing a recognition of the fact that it was through our teshuva, umaisim tovim, it was through our repentance and our good deeds that in fact Hashem hears our call, hears our cries, answers our call, and delivereth the salvation, like with Purim or in Ancona, in that particular Purim celebration. Now, I've been thinking in an introduction to this year of 2025 to kind of kick off today with something that I think we need to kind of take out of the last Chag. You know, Jews live almost from festival to festival. Yes, if we were to take the Shalosh Regalim, the biggest gap is between Sukkot and Pesach, the 6 months, or just under 6 months that passes usually between those 2 points. Quite a long time to wait for a Chag. But then comes Chanukah and Purim. And between Chanukah and Purim, we're under the influence, kind of the Chanukah message, hopefully then bringing us to the Purim kind of a message, which will happen in a few months' time when we celebrate that special Chag. But under the banner of a Chanukah, which unfortunately this year, in a way, took place right in the midst of in the school holidays. Yeah, we noticed that there were quite a lot of people in town during the festival of Chanukah this year. But a lot of people were celebrating Chanukah in Plettenberg Bay or in Cape Town or overseas or wherever they happened to be. But this festival of Chanukah worldwide and wherever you celebrated it has the message of light. Now, it's a well-known image that is actually adapted from Ecclesiastes, from the book of Ecclesiastes, where we have the statement that a little bit of light can expel, can push away a lot of darkness. And when we think about this image, it encapsulates really what the theme of Chanukah is truly all about. And perhaps let's extrapolate from there and look forward to what that theme could and should be about for each and every one of us in our lives, in our daily lives, and certainly in our year ahead, It's just the time when school has begun. It's just the time when kids have gone back to school, when matric results have just come out. And congratulations to all of those who did so well. I understand from around town that there were brilliant results coming out of our Jewish community, as always. And kol hakavod to the young men and women who excelled at it so well. But it causes us to pause for a moment and think about what true Jewish education is actually all about. And of course, it's about learning Torah. Of course, it's about studying the works and the words of our sages. Of course, it is about learning the Menschlichkeit, civil behavior, the human behavior, the kind behavior that we try to expound upon and integrate into our youth, so that going forward we have a kinder, better, nicer, more decent world. Of course, all of that. But just drilling down and thinking from a really philosophical point of view, how we can integrate this idea of light pushing away darkness in education. It is stated many, many times by many of our sages as a great and a beautiful image. And if we think about it, the image is a simple one, but yet it has a profoundly deep meaning. Let's think about the concept of going into a dark room. You enter into a dark, dark space, into a dark room, and there is darkness all around. Now, if one were dropping from another planet, if one had not seen darkness and light and how they work opposite each other ever before, and you were just in this darkness, one could be forgiven for thinking that you had to do something to get rid of that darkness, get that darkness out of the way. Now, you could think about sweeping the darkness away. You could think about dusting it away. You could think about pushing it away. And we all know that, of course, that is ridiculous. None of that would ever help. You cannot sweep away darkness. You cannot push it away. That darkness will still be there. There is something, though, amazing, and that's if one doesn't focus entirely on the darkness and shifts the focus to light, and if one was able to kindle a small flame, light a candle, light a match, strike a light, or turn on an electric light if you had that luxury, which we don't always have in our wonderful environment here in South Africa, although things have got a lot better, but we just happen to be battling with it at the moment. The turning on of a light can and does expel that darkness. Now, it's kind of on a linear kind of an application. It's sort of counterintuitive. You're not really dealing with the darkness. You're doing something else to take that darkness away. And if we think about darkness in terms of bad environment, in terms of the way that it is often used, about a world that is dark, about things that are dark, about the dark side of life, of internet, of all those things, when we think about darkness, it is often synonymous with negativity, with evil, with bad stuff. That's really, unfortunately, what darkness really means to each and every one of us, certainly euphemistically and certainly in a way of the metaphor of darkness. If we think then about how light works, well, light is the opposite. Light is goodness. Light is excitement. It is kindness. We talk about a person's face lighting up when they smile. We talk about the light of knowledge, of how the lights get turned on in the mind and in the world. And we talk about acts of goodness and kindness and mitzvahs and Torah. Torah is compared to or, to light. Mitzvot are compared to neirot, to a neir, to candles. So candles and light are synonymous with Torah and mitzvahs. And we think about how the minds really of the great authors of the books of Ecclesiastes, and then many, many Hasidic and other works which delve into this concept of light dispelling darkness, and how a little bit of light can dispel a lot of darkness. It surely has to be the idea of how we focus in our education of children, how we focus in our education of our own children, let alone the kids in our schools, the young men and women who are going to grow up to be the leaders, not only of now, but certainly in the future, of how the message of light rather than darkness, or light instead of addressing the darkness, to just address the light, is something profoundly unique and important in a system of positive education. And we think about how a focus can often be around you're doing this wrong and you're doing that wrong and you're getting involved in evil and you're getting involved in bad stuff. And we need to, or we often feel that we need to, spend a lot of time focusing on that darkness, not only in how to address it, but how to deal with it, what it's really all about, why it is so bad, the harm that it's going to do to you, to your soul, to your being, to your family, to your environment. And there may just be a much better and perhaps even a simpler method of getting rid of that darkness, and that is by kindling light, by focusing on the good, by encouraging the acts of kindness and the study of Torah and the involvement in things that create light. Because that light ultimately will condition the soul, the person, and the environment that they are in to be much lighter, much better, much brighter, much more filled with goodness, with kindness, with all the wonderful things that will ultimately expel, expunge, and push away the darkness. And as that darkness is less and less significant, it kind of dissipates on its own, rather than us having to spend time addressing and looking at it and thinking about it and contemplating it and defining it. And it's endless, and we don't really get anywhere by using our big brooms, so to speak, to try and push away the darkness. Rather, let's create more light.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Yes, and welcome back. Rabbi Michael Katz here with you. Judaism 101.9. This is your radio station, Chai FM, and it's great to be with you. And we've been talking about the concept of light pushing away darkness and how we need to encourage the creation of more light rather than focusing too much on the darkness. It's a much more productive and a much more realistic and a much more attainable kind of an end to create light. And how do we create light? Well, any mitzvah brings light. Any mitzvah at all. When a person does a mitzvah, whether it is charity, whether it is an act of kindness, whether it is the making of a bracha, whether it is eating kosher food, whether it is looking after the elderly, respecting for your parents, etc., etc., etc. Any single mitzvah creates spiritual light. That spiritual light pushes away a tremendous amount of the negative darkness that pervades in the world. And it can be the same thing with the learning of words of Torah. Yes, it's not necessarily true that a person has to study Torah in order to kind of perfect his behavior, or perhaps to study the Torah that interests you the most because it's going to benefit you the best in your business or in your line of work or in your ability to understand people and be a better father, mother, or brother, or sister, or child. It is just the concept of learning God's Torah, of taking the words of Torah, each one of which is filled with light, studying it, learning it, verbalizing it, thinking it, and in that way we create light. And that light expels the darkness. That is the light that we're talking about. We're talking about this light that can expel that darkness. And this was really, if we think about it, the focus of the Maccabees. And now we all know the famous Maccabees from the Hanukkah story as being these soldiers, these freedom fighters who went into battle against the Assyrian Greeks and far outnumbered and far outgunned. They managed to pull off a tremendous victory for Jews everywhere, for Judaism, for Torah, for the Beit HaMikdash, for the temple, and drive the Assyrian Greek army right out of Israel. It was something incredible. But it was actually what they did next that truly goes down as the mark of this special chag, in whose shadow we are still basking and thinking about, and needs to carry us with its theme right up as to at least Purim, and hopefully for the rest of the year as well. And that is this idea of light. They saw fit and they knew that they need to rekindle the menorah. How did they need to rekindle that menorah? They had to find kosher oil. They had to find the oil, not that everybody else would be using, but they needed to find the shemen. They need to find the shemen Zayid Zach that was katit lamaor, that was ready for the lighting up of the menorah in the Beit HaMikdash in the temple. It was a light that needed to disseminate from there and outwards. It needed to be placed there in the whole world, and they knew in their heart of hearts that this had to be the best. It had to have the seal of the Kohen Gadol. It had to be untarnished, uncomplicated, messed by the world. It needed to be that pure, holy Kedusha oil that they were able to find. And yes, of course, Hashem turned it into one of the greatest miracles in our history, the idea of the oil that was enough to burn for one day, lasting eight, until they were able to manufacture new oil. It is a message of how we need to go out of our way to find the light, to then create that light, and then bring that light to our youth, to our children, to our families, and to our world, and by so doing, to dispel, push away all the darkness that pervades us. Hopefully we'll be able to do that very, very soon, and as we started off this episode of Judaism 101.9, very soon we'll be able to have the Biat Mashiach, that Achakelo Bechol Yom Sheyavo, that we wait for each and every day. Be back with you to sum up right after this.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi, and welcome back. Judaism 101.9 with Rabbi Michael Katz. Yes, and we're coming towards the end of our time together for this day. But been on a bit of a journey and thinking about all the things that are reoccurring and have happened before, whether it's with the Ottoman Empire, whether it's with the Persians, whether it's with trying to find out who our true friends are in this world. Was it the Shah, or was it the deposers of the Shah, going all the way back to those days in the 1600s, as we discussed right at the beginning? And it is a gross understatement to say that there are problems and there are issues and there are things that we are sitting on the edge of our seats waiting for, whether there's going to be a hostage deal and whether the people are going to emerge from that darkness where they've been held for far, far, far too long, and whether this is going to bring about a renewed effort of peace in the world, and certainly in that region. Can it be trusted? Is it something that is going to see an end to the hostilities and end to the death and dying that unfortunately has been taking place over this past year, and an end to the anti-Semitism in the world that raised its ugly head kind of wherever you turned around the world? But there is one remedy that we have in our hands, and that is, it is a world that is filled with a lot of darkness. And while we can think that it's our job to address that darkness, to think about that darkness, to know what it is all about, and actually then only to address it, there is a much simpler way and a much more direct way that our sages have taught us and that we learn from the book of Ecclesiastes, which is create light. Do acts of kindness, do acts of goodness, do mitzvahs, give tzedakah, do your Torah, say your Tehillim. These are things that are in our hand, and you think sometimes that, come on, how can that really help? It does. It creates light. It brings a positive energy into the world. It makes us positive, and it creates the very light that will push away the darkness. And yes, of course, we need to be united. Yes, of course, we need to be together. And yes, of course, we need to know where we're headed. And each and every day we need to wait for the coming of Mashiach, where the light of the Torah and the mitzvahs will actually be revealed to each and every one of us in a much deeper, much more valuable, much more obvious kind of a way. We look forward to those days, and we hope that they come very, very soon, very speedily in our time. I wish you a great rest of the week, a great Shabbat up ahead. Look forward to being back with you same time, same place next week for another exciting episode of Judaism 101.9.